Maggie's been with HMRC for a number of years. She moved into policy in about 2000 and as of late was one of the first people into the RTI sort of sphere. I'll hand you over to Maggie because she will make much more sense of what I've just been saying. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Can we show mutual appreciation, please?
Good afternoon, everyone. It's nice to be here. That's me. The agenda today is very much about me giving you some of the key facts about real-time information, what the main changes are going to be for payroll, a bit of context around why we want to introduce real-time information and what's happening now with the pilot, etc. But the main message that I would like you to take back is what you need to think about now. And that will become apparent as I sort of go through my presentation. I hope everyone's heard of real-time information, RTI. It's mandatory for everyone who operates payroll, and it's coming in April 13, which is not that far away. It's a fundamental change to the way, not that pay-as-you-earn is operated, you know, there are no changes there, but what it is a huge change to the way you report the information that you collect around pay-as-you-earn. And in particular, what happens with real-time information, because it is what it says on the label, information coming in real-time, you move away from the opportunity or the approach that you've got a year to sort things out before you send in the end-of-year forms to HMRC. Everything is going to be much more immediate, and that's a big change in the approach to operating pay-as-you-earn, and indeed for some people in some organisations, for the processes that they have in place for pay-as-you-earn. So what is real-time information? Well, it's priority government programme. It has two main reasons for being introduced. The first is as a standalone pay-as-you-earn programme. Pay-as-you-earn was introduced in 1944. It was introduced at a time when we were at war, and the people who developed it came up with an absolutely brilliant payment on account system that meant the vast majority of people being brought into the tax administration system for the first time. And they did that in less than a year. They brought 15 million people into the tax administration system in such a way that very, very few of them had to have any interaction with the tax authorities at the end of the year. With any payment on account system, there has to be an end of year reconciliation. And, you know, we have that just now. But the driving force behind that was get it right first time, get it right during the course of the year. And so come the end of the year, nobody needs to do anything. We do our reconciliation. No one's underpaid, no one's overpaid.
Yeah, well, can't.
The problem. But the work environment has changed quite considerably since then. And for the vast majority of people, pay-as-you-earn still works. Somebody like me, civil servant, one job, one source of income, no benefits in kind. I get to the end of the year, and fortunately, my employers have got it right. They've managed to operate the tax codes that they've sent themselves, and they've managed to operate the tax tables correctly. So I never, ever have a P800 sent to me at the end of the year. But that doesn't work for anyone that's got more than one source of income, necessarily. Pensioners, students, people with one or two part-time jobs. It's really, really difficult for us to get that right because what we're doing is we're sending out instructions predicated on information that we've actually received from employers the year before and it's out of date. A lot of the issues that we have around the accuracy of tax codes are because we do not have an up-to-date global view of the individual circumstances. And that's why pay-as-you-earn is beginning to not fail exactly, but it doesn't work quite as well for a number of people, and those people tend to be in the lower income bands. So that's one reason to look at improving pay-as-you-earn, to try and improve the accuracy. Another reason to improve it is to improve the not just the customer experience for individuals, that's very important, but also for employers. As employers or people who operate payroll, you know that you're basically operating it, making the deductions and reporting the information to us and doing a lot of that work on our behalf. And as the years have gone on and pay-as-you-earn has become more onerous with the introduction first of national insurance contributions and then latterly student loan contributions, it builds up and builds up and it's become far more complex than it was when it was first introduced. We do want to try and reduce the admin burden for employers. It's difficult, but we think that introducing a single integrated process, which is what real-time information will be, will actually go some way once we're over transition to reducing the admin burden of operating pay-as-you-earn, of operating payroll and the reporting of the information that's collected. It's also there to help us deliver sustainable sort of cost reductions for HMRC. Like any government department, we have targets in terms of reducing our overheads. And the only way that we can carry on giving a halfway decent customer service, and not everyone would agree that we manage that just now all the time, but we do try, but it's difficult for us, and it's not just about us trying to automate to balance out the reductions that we have. It's about us using the information that we collect in a far more intelligent manner. If we collect information that we know is up to date and real time about one area that can be used in another area, for instance, to feed through to tax credits, then it makes sense for us to do that rather than going back and asking for people to send in the same information to us again. So real-time information will allow us to start addressing some of those issues that we have around the transfer of information, not just within HMRC, but across Whitehall as well, to make it much easier in terms of operating benefit systems, and also so that perhaps going forward we don't have employers consistently being asked to carry on or keep providing the same information over and over again, not just to us, but perhaps to ONS as well. It will also help reduce the tax gap, and simply because anything that becomes more efficient becomes more effective, and an effective system means that money will be flowing into the Treasury, into the Exchequer, more regularly and more frequently and more accurately than it is just now. So as a standalone pay-as-you-earn project, real-time information has a lot of merit. Having information in real time about what's going on helps us address a lot of the problems that we currently have with the pay-as-you-earn system. But there's another reason for the introduction of real-time information, and that is to support universal credits. I hope everyone's fairly aware that the government has a welfare reform strategy, which, as part and parcel of it, means that they want to get rid of the current in-and-out-of-work benefits that we have and replace them with a single universal credit for people who are in and out of work. And what DWP want to do is introduce a system that doesn't replicate what they've got just now. They want a system that is that encourages people into work and encourages people who are working to work more, part-timers to work more rather than people like me to work 50 hours a week. But what they want to do is have a system that's easy to administer, both for themselves and for the people who are going to be claiming universal credit. And one way that we can help do that is by supplying an accurate, up-to-date, reliable source of information about people's income to DWP, so that when that person's circumstances change in some way, perhaps they're working part-time and on the run-up to Christmas, they start to work more hours, work full-time. What you would have just now is a situation where DWP would want to know why there was a change in circumstances. That individual might very well either have to cease their claim or provide DWP with supporting documentation, usually on paper, as to why their income has changed for that short period. It causes all sorts of problems, and DWP want to move away from that. We will be supplying DWP with up-to-date information about an individual's income to allow them to flex the universal credit that they're paying to that individual on an almost automatic basis. So it makes the system much easier for DWP to administer and also makes it much simpler for the individual who's claiming universal credit. And universal credit, as I say, it's for people who are in work as well as out of work. Tax credits will eventually be subsumed into universal credit. So if you currently have people on your workforce who claim tax credits, you will have people in the workforce going forward claiming universal credit. So it is important that we get that right. So what are the main changes for payroll? Well, RTI is what it says on the label. It's sending information about the people that you pay and the deductions that you make into HMRC in real time. It's envisaged as being a single integrated process that ties the submission, the payment of individuals with the submission of the information about those individuals. And you'll send that information in electronically. Currently, payroll, P14s, P35s, everything is mandated online. You send in the forms online. Going forward, that will continue. There are no exceptions for employers, with the exception of care and support employers. We call them accidental employers. Someone who takes the responsibility for running their own care budget from the local authority automatically becomes an employer liable to operate pay-as-you-earn when they employ someone to look after them. It's not an ideal situation, but we are where we are with that. That group of employers will have the option not to opt out of real-time information, but to send the information in to us on paper, if that's what they want to do, as will those who currently have an exemption because of religious grounds, usually the Plymouth Brethren. But for everyone else, the information will come in electronically, and it will come in on a form that we call a full payment submission. And that full payment submission form consists of about 120-odd data items. And those data items are the data items that you currently use to run payroll. It's data items about the individual, national insurance number, name, date of birth, etc., to allow us to identify the individual that's being paid, and all the pieces of information that are needed to advise HMRC how payroll has been operated and how pay-as-you-earn has been applied to that individual. Everything that we're asking for, bar three pieces of information, is information that you currently either have to send in to HMRC during the course of the year or at the end of the year. And if it's not information that you send in to us routinely, it's information you're required to keep, so that if you're unlucky enough to have a visit from us and we ask questions, you've got it there. The three new pieces of information that we're asking for are details of hours worked. That's the first one. That's not something that we ask you for just now. Going forward, you will have to supply that as part and parcel of the full payment submission. And the reason we want details of hours worked is not, as you might think, primarily for universal credit purposes, but it's to help us iron out some of the issues that we have with the tax credit system. Tax credits will be subsumed into universal credit, but not immediately. And we're asking you to report the normal contractual hours worked in bands. And those bands are under 16 hours, under 30 hours, over 30 hours, and other. Other isn't the default if you can't get the information. That's for pension companies who are paying pensions. All of that information will now have to go onto your payroll system. And this is where you need to start thinking about where the information's currently held and what you might have to think about when you go back to your organisations once this is over. The second piece of information, it goes on to the FPS that's new, is the partner's details, where you have someone claiming ASPP, additional statutory paternity pay. Currently, you're supposed to, I think, under legislation, collect the details, the name of the partner and the partner's national insurance number. But neither we nor DWP actually ask you for it. But going forwards, we will, and that's information that, again, has to be acquired and put onto the payroll system. The third new piece of information is not mandatory, but people quite often don't hear me say that when I say that it's the passport number. The passport number.
What?
It's the passport number in very specific circumstances. And those circumstances are where you have someone who's a new starter, who does not have a national insurance number. We assume that as a responsible employer, you will want to satisfy yourself not only of that person's identity, but also that they're eligible to work in this country. And if, give me 2 seconds, and if you do collect that information, then we would like you to send in to us. Only in those circumstances, we're not asking you to go back and go through and ask everyone on your workforce to supply their passport numbers in advance of you being invited onto real-time information. Only in those circumstances and only if you collect it. Because, as you know, the national insurance number for most people is the main identifier. We don't have a national insurance number. We need to have other ways in order to ensure that we can match the individual who's being paid with the record that we have. There was a lady there that wanted to ask a question.
What if they're under 16?
If they're under 16...
They don't have a national insurance number, they might not have a passport either.
That's right. So you wouldn't collect it. And as it's not mandatory, and as we're asking you only to send in to us, if you collect it, then there's not an issue. In actual fact, what you could use is the child benefit number, because that becomes the national insurance number for the individual anyway. But that's why it's not mandatory. I'm not saying that you have to start collecting child benefit numbers. All I'm saying, in the course of conversation, as a nugget of information that you may not know, a child benefit number turns into a national insurance number when someone gets to the age of 15 and three quarters. It is not something that we are asking for under real-time information. So those are three new pieces of information that are perhaps going to have to be collected, and you have to start thinking about where from, where do you hold that information already? If you've got an integrated HR payroll system, then perhaps it's already there. It's not a problem. But if the systems are separate, then you may have to think about how you're going to get that information. First of all, collected, it might mean a change to the process for taking on a new starter, and certainly making sure that your systems can talk to each other going forward for real-time information. The full payment submission will also contain the year-to-date figures, and that's quite important for reducing the admin burden for employers going forwards. Before I talk about that, I'd like to sort of talk about the method by which you'll send your full payment submission in to us, the FPS. If you use EDI, the Electronic Data Interchange System, just now, then that is the channel that you will use to submit your RTI information. If you use the government gateway, send it into us by internet, then you will use that going forward as well. For the small employers with 9 or fewer employees, our basic pay-as-you-earn tool is being upgraded so that it will be RTI compliant. And that's the free software that HMRC provides. There's also other free software out there, of course, that you can use as well. Now, going back to real-time information being what it says on the can, that information has to be sent into HMRC on or before the payroll button is pressed to pay the individuals. So that information has to come into us on or before you make payment to the individuals. Now, as I said, we're moving away from you've got a year to sort things out. There is no time lag. This is a very immediate system. And that, I think, is something that you know, I would urge you all to think about, to make sure that your processes are in place for collecting the data from clients if you happen to operate a payroll for small businesses.
How will that impact on this at the moment? You can keep the month open to the 5th of the next month and then finalise and do your submission in case that someone says, oh, I want to pay them a bit of overtime.
Yeah.
How will that impact on that if I've already sent the submission to you and then after that I get this extra information?
There will be corrections and amendments process.
Could you restate the question?
Yes, sorry. The lady asked, I think, basically, what happens if the payroll's closed and someone comes along with an overtime slip and wants to be paid? What happens then?
Am I right? The payroll is normally still open until the 5th, mm-hmm. but you want me to send the submission before I pay the person.
Yeah. We do want you to send the submission.
Send you the submission and then extra information comes along.
Yeah. You send the information in to us and there is indeed the risk that extra information will come along. You have two choices. You can either send a supplementary FPS into us with the new information, or you can roll that up in the next payroll run. You can pay them there and then, it's not a problem. But you have to also send the information in to us when you pay them.
Said before the payment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. On or before.
So does it matter how many submissions we send you in a month? We might end up sending you 3 or 4.
There is a difference between there will be a difference in terms of the way that the corrections and amendments run. We would expect that going forward some of the more laissez-faire employers will actually probably have to become a little more accurate in and timely in the submission of their information to the payroll bureaus.
But
because, you know, and it's something that I'm asked quite a lot, especially when it's someone who runs a payroll for a small employer. They just say, look, you're living in Cloud Cuckoo Land if you think I'm going to get that client to send information into me at the time I want it. Well, you have to have a dialogue with that individual in order for them to understand their statutory obligations. But also, don't forget the other reason that real-time information is being introduced. It's for universal credit. So that employer, if they have anyone who's claiming universal credit, will have an employee who will also want to make sure that the information is coming into us on time so that the universal credit is not adversely impacted. So I wouldn't want to stand here and say it's going to be a really easy job for you to do that, but it's not just you or indeed HMRC telling that employer to be more accurate and more timely. Yes.
Clearly, there's a lot of questions building up. Is it possible we could carry on through a little bit more, and then we've got a question and answer session at the end? Otherwise, we're going to get lost a bit.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. We'll come back to it. So the main changes for payroll, just to go back and summarise, are the extra data items, the fact that the information has to come in on or before payment is made. For employers who are direct BACS submitters, and that's ones who actually have the service user number and the card, then you need to include a hash cross-reference in your RTI submissions. Your payroll will automatically generate that, and it's just a number that also goes into field 7 of the BACS submission as well. Now, all of this is going to be supported by your payroll software. I don't want you to go away with the impression that it's all going to be down to you. Your payroll software will do most of it. We've worked really closely with the payroll industry to ensure that happens. Going forward, once we've got over transition, with any new system, it takes time to get used to how it works. But for the vast majority of people operating payroll, it will be a matter of inputting the information into the payroll system, as you do now. Once it's in there once, it's practically there the whole time. You're not having to do it over and over again. You will press one button to send the payment instructions off to the bank and another button to send the RTI information into HMRC. It will be a single integrated process. So, as I said, we want the year-to-date figures coming in as part and parcel of the full payment submission. And that means that the forms P35 and P14 will go. There is no need for that part of the end-of-year process. We will have the information, we will use it. Now, for a lot of people, it's no big deal because the software collects that information anyway on a rolling basis. But for some of the smaller employers out there, the end-of-year process is still very much an onerous process that can take up a lot of resource at the end of the year. So being able to reduce that part of the employer burden will certainly help and balances out the some of the increased, not increased burden, I wouldn't want to say that, but some of it balances out the frequency by which you're going to be sending information into HMRC. And it's a benefit, and it will be a benefit to employers going forwards. We're going to keep the forms P46 and P45 for starters and leavers, but only in terms of you being able to hang on to paper copies of the P46 if you want to, or indeed you giving a paper copy of the P45 to someone who's leaving. You will not be sending paper copies of those forms into HMRC because that information will go on to the FPS. For a new starter, you will input P46-style questions for the first time that person's going to be paid. For someone who leaves, you will put that information onto the last FPS that comes in that contains the details of that person and their last payment. And going forwards, I think it's probably quite clear that both the P45 and the P46 will eventually wither on the bough. As we're sending the information in electronically, why would you want to duplicate it on paper? What's not going to change? Well, a lot. Most of it's going to stay the same. The way in which tax and national insurance contributions are calculated stays the same. This is a change to the reporting of the information. It's not a change to the operation of pay-as-you-earn itself. You will still have to give employees the P60s at the end of the year, and you will still need to submit P11Ds. Unfortunately, the benefits in kind system is out with the scope of real-time information for the time being. However, there are employers out there who do have agreements with their local tax offices to payroll certain benefits in kind. Tends to be things like medical insurance. If you have that agreement in place, then you will be able to carry on doing that under the operation of RTI. You will be able to report those payrolled benefits on the FPS, but as now, you will still have to submit the paper P11Ds into HMRC. The dates by which you must pay HMRC remain the same, as indeed do the methods by which you pay your employees. We are not trying to push anyone who currently pays by cash or cheque onto paying their employees electronically. That's not the case. You will carry on using exactly the same method as you do just now. You will carry on sending money in to us on the 19th or the 22nd of the month as you do just now. But there are a couple of differences. Because just now under the current system we don't get information in on P35s until the end of the tax year, we don't actually know how much an employer ought to be paying over on the 19th or the 22nd of the month. We assume the vast majority of employers pay over what they've deducted, but there are employers out there who know that we don't really know and they take advantage of it. And that gives rise to something like between £2 and £3 billion a year of in-year pay-as-you-earn debt at any one time. Yes, we get the vast majority of it in by the end of the year so that when we do the reconciliation, we do the comparison and we can see what's been reported on the P35 matches up with what's been paid over in total during the year. But as I say, there are employers out there who take advantage of it, and it leads to the not being an even playing field for the, you know, it's not fair on the compliant employers when that happens. So, you know, for the first time we will actually know, because we've got the RTI information in, what's been deducted, and we'll know what to expect to be paid over. And as a tax inspector, that warms my heart. But, you know, it's fair enough. It's not fair on the employers who do take their obligations seriously. And there will be a new debt management system introduced to support the operation of real-time information. There will also be a new penalty system to support the introduction of real-time information, which warms my heart even more. But it's important to know that what we want to do in terms of penalties and debt management is just to make sure that everyone does what they ought to do. So for those employers now, going forward, who perhaps use some of the deductions that they've made to help with the cash flow, then, you know, they're going to have to revisit the processes and make sure that, that doesn't happen going forwards. It will allow HMRC, and I wouldn't want you to think that that we wouldn't be doing this. We will certainly have, for those employers who find themselves through no fault of their own unable to pay over what they should be paying over, we will be able to provide targeted support to those employers so that we can get official time to pay processes in place. So, you know, it will help us make that system far more efficient as well. But for the vast majority, you'll send in your real-time information, we'll look to see what you've reported, we'll check to see that that's what you've paid over, and that's fine. That earnings period will be closed off, and in fact, you'll be able to use the employer's dashboard to view your liabilities and view the fact that the money that's been sent in has actually been set against that particular period. Because we've got real-time information coming in, it means that if there are any issues, any mistakes, we can come back to you in real-time and sort them out. So there's going to be much less chance of money going into a suspense account and not being allocated against a pay-as-you-earn liability than perhaps there is just now. But sometimes you will not be sending in what we expect for very good reason. You may need to offset a refund for statutory payments or CIS deductions if you're a limited company who is also liable to CIS deductions. So what you will do in those circumstances is you will complete an EPS at the time you send the money into HMRC. And that basically tells us why you're not sending in what we would expect. It's not quite the excuse note, but, you know, it's a method of letting us know what happens so that the system can pick that up and not make any mistakes. For those employers who have very small payrolls and perhaps lose the only two members of staff that they have during the course of the year and then take 2 or 3 months to replace them, they'll also be able to use the EPS to inform us not to expect an FPS coming in. So, you know, it's a method there to let us know what's happening if something is out of the ordinary.
Maggie, sorry, I'm conscious that we'd like to have some time at the end for questions and answers, so if you've got 3 minutes or so on the key bits, and then
right,
we'll do the Q&A.
Okie doke. He's telling me I talk too much.
I would never do that to you.
Right. The pilot started. It's going really well. What you need to think about now is data quality. Data quality is absolutely key. It's fundamental to the operation of real-time information. And for you in particular, what this means, and there's lots of stuff in this pack for you to look at your leisure, so I'm not going to go into it all, but the four key pieces of information for an individual are the national insurance number, the full name, the date of birth, and the gender. Three of those are mandatory, and that's the name, date of birth and gender, because there are all sorts of reasons why you may not have a national insurance number. Your processes have to pick that information up from a new starter before you make the first payment to them. And your processes have to make sure that before you're invited onto real-time information from April next year, that you've got all that information accurately and in the correct format ready to go onto payroll. And that's the message, I think, more than anything, that I would like you to take away. It's all about data quality, ensuring that you've got the full information that's required and you've got processes in place to collect that information going forwards from people who are new starters. There will be a form of payroll alignment where we check our records against the employer's record on the premise the employer knows who they're employing. And that alignment will be something that every single employer will go through going forwards at the point or just before they're invited onto RTI. For small employers, those with fewer than 250 employees, their first full FPS will be the alignment submission. If you've got more than 250 employees, then you will go through a separate employer alignment submission so that we can get the data right first time as you move on to real-time information. And then going forwards, where there are errors, we're in a position to come back to you and get them sorted out really, really quickly. So the main message, I think, from this session for me is check your data, check your processes. What do you need to prepare in terms of looking at where you hold information about passport numbers, hours worked? Can you get that information onto the payroll and talk to your software developer? They've done most of the work for you and they will help support you through real-time information. And that's a very tax inspectory type slide. I won't go into that in great detail. There's lots of help and support out there. Again, this information's in your pack. Thank you. Questions?
Sorry. Okay, thank you. So what we'll do now is have, say, a Q&A of about 10 minutes, and then 2 to 3 minutes at the very end, Ian Whiteside, who's going to be helping on the Q&A side from the AT perspective, will then just tell you a little bit about our consultation or perhaps about getting one or two people to feed back in to the process going forward. So, yep, we can open for questions. Gentlemen down here, front. We've got the roving mics, that's good. If you can say your name and your branch, it would be rather, brings you a bit more to life for other people.
The three changes that you suggested...
Sorry, your name and your brother?
My name is George Michael.
There's a joke there somewhere, isn't there?
Yes.
You can sing that one.
The three main changes you said earlier, the second one was partners' details. How does that infringe with the data protection and especially ourselves as the agents, acting agents, not being engaged in any way with the third party?
The details of the partner for someone who's claiming additional statutory paternity pay, and only in those circumstances, are currently a legal obligation. If you have someone on the workforce who wants to share the maternity-paternity leave with their partner, then in order to make that claim to DWP, they're required to give that information in just now for tax compliance purposes. It's no change. It just means that instead of asking you to collect it but not asking you to send it in to us on a piece of paper, you'll be sending it in to us on the payroll from now on. It doesn't impact on data protection in any way, shape or form. It's part and parcel of the criteria for claiming additional statutory paternity pay.
Ian, you want to come in there?
Yes, I was just going to sort of agree with Maggie there that, yes, it is information that we're required to collect now anyway. This is not looking for anything more.
And second point also...
Can we say restricted to one, otherwise we won't get round? We're not going to get round anyway, but we'll do our best.
Hi, this is Susan Frank from the Oxford branch. Are the Inland Revenue systems robust enough to take all these real-time information? I'm sorry, the reason I'm asking this is I've submitted CIS returns, and been stuck in a loop until it's been submitted. And I'm a little bit worried about all these payrolls that are going to be submitted at the same time.
And I think that's a very reasonable comment to make, because in the past, perhaps, we haven't been as robust in our IT systems and in the design of our IT systems as we might have liked. That's one of the reasons why we've got the pilot in the format that it is in at the moment, is to test the robustness of the systems. We've made changes to our systems. We've made changes to the gateways into HMRC so that they can support the volumes of information coming in, just as software developers have made changes to their software. The pilot is testing that just now. Started with 10 employers, a very large employer called HMRC was one of them, to give us first-hand, you know, a first-hand idea of what we're asking employers to do. But we've also got 55,000 or so employees. And so the systems are being tested for that. And at the moment, all signs are good. The next 310 are coming on, and that includes one of the really big pension providers who will be submitting on a daily basis, hundreds of thousands. So we do think that the changes that we've made to the systems will support real-time information.
It's mind-boggling how big some of this is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It wasn't even understood until you started looking into it that pension providers file on a daily basis. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Is there someone from the middle with a yeah, and then I'll come to you after. One from the middle.
Yeah, Glenn Leithley here from Manchester Branch. You mentioned in passing the employer's dashboard.
Yeah.
And as a practice which does probably somewhere between 50 and 70 payrolls a month, it'd be incredibly useful to us as agents to see the dashboard. Is it going to be made available to agents?
Can I take that one?
Yes, if you like. Yeah. I've got the latest lines on that as well.
You have as well. Okay, well, we were, I don't know where you were there, but there was a meeting at Charlie Cadence Hall when this whole sort of the agent strategy was being launched recently, or relaunched again. And the point about the fact that the dashboard isn't available to agents was obviously quite a vexatious issue. And I mean, the honest truth about it was that when it was originally dreamed up, there was no choice about the way it was delivered. It was more ministerially driven than it was, you know. HMRC may well have wanted to do, I can't put words in their mouth, but they may well have wanted to do it more down the agent's channel, but it wasn't. But if you've got the latest answer on that.
There are issues, strangely enough, it's to do with data protection, etc., mm-hmm. but we're looking at it.
Yeah. I mean, the point has been very well made from a lot of people that the dashboard would really make the biggest multiplier effect would be in us. So that is understood and received, and you know, if you can just down the front.
Thank you.
Penny Lowe from North Hampshire. I do a fair number of weekly payrolls, including pubs who don't work a week in hand. So having sent one lot of payslips, I may well get a text message saying somebody's off sick. Can you knock another 2 hours off before I pay them tonight? Mm. How am I going to be managing things like that? That's part one. And the second part is where the publican is away, we'll often pay on account hours because nobody's there to report them to me. But I still need to do the payroll and email the payslips to them.
Yeah. To take the second part of the question first, you can submit in advance. In situations like that, somebody came up with the example of someone who employs a nanny, and if the employer goes away on holiday, she likes to pay the nanny 3 weeks in advance. Well, there's nothing to stop her, because it's on or before, submitting the RTI information 3 weeks in advance as well. First part of your question, remind me again. Sorry, I've got many like a gnat.
It was where we do
changes and corrections.
You know, yeah. It's weekly and. You know, the text will come through saying somebody's off sick, can you change it before we pay them tomorrow?
When we looked at introducing real-time information, you know, you might not believe this, but it wasn't a bunch of civil servants sitting in an ivory tower going, ooh, let's make things difficult for people. We have consulted and consulted on this, and the one thing that came back time and time again was payroll is not an exact science because human beings are involved, employees are involved. So there will be a corrections and amendments process in place. Whether that is sending in supplementary FPS in between the normal FPS or whether it's sending the information in on the next FPS, that facility will be there because we recognise that it's a fact of life.
Ian, do you want to add anything about that in consultation engagement side? Or should we do that after the bond?
Yeah.
I've got time probably for one more question. Middle.
Lois from Somerset Branch. If people are salaried and they've got no set hours, how are we going to put the hours in?
I'm salaried with 37 hours a week, so you know you have to look at the normal contractual hours for that individual, and that's what will go in. It's a banding system to help support universal tax credits. It is not a case of having to complete extra overtime hours at any one time. You'll probably input it for that individual unless their circumstances change very dramatically. It will always be that for that individual. You will perhaps have to make an educated guess at the very beginning if it's nil hours, but nil contracted hours, but you know someone works under 30 or under 16. And it can change throughout the course of the year if the circumstances change materially.
I was thinking more of the directors that just have £700 of
In that case, it might very well be appropriate to put it in the other box. But it's not a default box, but for certain circumstances you'll do that.
Did you say you've got a question, Ian?
Yes, if that was the sort of last question for other people. I've got one question for you, Maggie.
We're building your time up here.
I know. But you slipped in very, very early in your presentation reference to the Office for National Statistics, or ONS. Nobody's picked up on that, and I just wondered if you'd comment a little bit more, because that's actually quite scary. I know a number of AAT members were at a meeting with me.
Only if we can do it briefly, because you want
very
to bring your presentation a bit. So.
Okay, very briefly. If you have someone with a national insurance number that ends in a 14, that's why you get picked to complete the ONS survey. If we are collecting information about individuals that ONS are interested in, then it stands to reason that once we've introduced RTI, once we've had a chance to make sure that it's embedded, then we look to see how we can share that information quite legally and above board across government, not just to help us, but to help employers. And that's one example of what we could do.
Right. Thank you. Interesting answer. Good question. Ian, do you want to just talk about...
Yeah, very quickly. In fact, that was the main reason I wanted to ask that question, is the fact that when myself and some other AAT members went to a meeting with Revenue and Customs, we actually had officers from ONS at the meeting, and we didn't really understand why, because we thought we were going to be discussing RTI. So it came as quite a shock to us when we realised that there was another government body who was climbing on the bandwagon. Okay, they're not climbing on the bandwagon, but the way was on the bandwagon. And it brings me to the subject of consultation. I did the original RTI consultation responses last year on behalf of members. And it's great seeing so many people here, etc. But when we've asked for... help towards these consultation exercises. You're all very, very busy people. We don't get much in the way of responses. What I was going to ask was that there's going to be further consultation, not just on this. There's loads of consultations. One of my AAT contacts is there. We've got a whole stack of consultations that are going on. And there are some views, some quite strong views that some of you have expressed today. It would be nice to be able to call on you to actually help people like me make sure that when I respond to exercises like this, that it is representing you and not me thinking that I know what it is you all want, which often is the way that
actually,
happens.
Actually, what might be helpful, I won't do it now, because Aline, you and I are very active on sort of seeking responses to consultation. I might, if we get a bit of chance, try and spend 5 minutes during this weekend just telling you the sort of thing that we do, because there is actually quite a level of some engagement that went on, say, take account the agent strategy and our response to that. We did several different levels of consultation to make sure that what we were saying from the centre was not out of step with what everybody else wants, because we might think we know what people want, but do we really? So we did actually spend a lot of time engaging with that. Brian Redford was here last year and various other things. So if we get a chance, we might try and slot something in. But thank you very much. Before we show our appreciation, first thank you. I'd like to thank you very much because I think that the question and answers have been very constructive. They've helped, you know, illustrate concerns, broaden it out for other people to understand issues, to help Maggie have a chance of clarifying certain points. And I'm, as I said, when I opened up, you know, Maggie, I think, it represents a very, very good public face of HMRC, and I think you've responded very well. So I'd like to thank Maggie for giving up her time. She's got to travel back, presumably, across to London now, so, you know, she'll finish late this weekend, and I'm sure, you know, doesn't get a huge amount of extra appreciation for it, so can we show it now? And before you run out, I must also thank Ian. I mean, Ian does put a lot of time into the consultation with RTI. I've seen the papers he writes. They're very, very good quality. He doesn't do it in a vacuum. We do take soundings. We can always welcome more, and that's what we'll work on. But we thank Ian as well for his part in this. the usual shuffle round rooms. I think we've got coffee now, if I'm reading this correct. Because you've been good, you've got 20 minutes, and then you have to ask which rooms you're in. I don't know. Maggie, you did a brilliant job.
Thank you very much.
Sorry. Right, you sort of do it.
I'll hang around in case anyone's got any questions. Oh. Fortunately.
I want to ask one question.
Sorry, you need to.
I know,
thanks. Yeah, I've got a question.
The incentives for joining the pilot, for instance, would be that you'll get much closer support than you will when it's business as usual, when everybody starts in April 30, and that you will get out. Okay. You don't have to do the P14s and the P35s in the pilot year. There is none. Yeah, there won't be. What I can say is, you know, I now joke about the penalty regime and everything else. We want a penalty regime that we don't have to use because everyone is using RTI in the way that we want them to. So it's not a penalty regime that's going to start on the 6th of April next year.
Is there one of these?
Yes. As long as your software developer, you need to talk to your software developer and make sure that they've got a product that's ready to join the pilot rather than the next year.
I needed just to get the questions around the room.
It's very interesting.
Well, it will be.
Sorry.
Yes.
I do apologize. This is bang on the money at the moment, yeah. That's all I felt.
Tennis to anyone?
I get the beef.
I can't promise an answer. Yeah, yeah.
Jim said, no, you'll get them in the archery practice, but she said, no, if I give them to your is it because you'll get them from the vanilla? What was she?
Did you get these ones here?
One, two, three. So it says, and that's it, there wasn't anything else. I don't mean that really.
No.
It's just the way she said it.
Yeah, go on. Tell what. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the... Yeah, go on, what was it?
Yeah. All right.
We were coming back, asked me.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, that's the only pack we've got, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the only pack they have.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll
all be a big, big normal, but, you know.
We'll
get
ahead
round it.
Go
around and take the
table.
Once we move on, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
That's, okay. Yeah, that's it. And he will, he's there in the long run.
If not, I'll just
shout. Doing it in the year.
Okay. Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah.
To be in
Europe? No.